Welcome to Gardening Talk, back on to NURFM today, joined by Scotty Sharp back in the studio. Great to see you, Scott.
Good afternoon. Had to check the clock then.
Yes, just afternoon.
Just afternoon. We've made it.
Eased in. The morning's gone.
Yep.
And we're smooth sailing for the rest of the day.
Right, very good for that.
Fingers crossed. What do you got lined up for us today, Scott?
Yeah, I thought I'd talk about a vine that's out in flower everywhere at the moment. It's called coral vine or antignon. It's a pinky-coloured flower, so we'll talk about that later on. Also how to prepare your beds for sweet pea. Growing beetroot, great time to do that as well. And what to do with your passion fruit at this time of year? People always ringing about their passion fruit and always happy to take their calls about the passion fruit.
Right. I'm assuming you pick it this time of year?
Well, I'm not going to spoil the surprise for you. Stop trying to tease it out of me.
Okay. Well, no more guesses.
Okay.
Surely you pick it though.
You can do that as well.
Starting it all off today, we've got Ian. He's got a question about lemons.
Good afternoon, Ian. How can we help you, mate?
G'day, Scotty. How are you keeping?
Pretty well.
You're a champion. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show every week. It's a highlight for us at the farm.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Beautiful country up there around Dungog?
Yeah, we're the upper reaches of the Karua River. And we've got about 120 cows and Charolais and Angus and 16 lemon trees.
16?
Which are causing us grief.
I was going to say, what's the easiest to look after, the cows or the lemons?
What, the cows? So the lemons, they're ripening as we speak, and then we pick them, and then we put them in a bag and think, well, we can take them to our family in Newcastle, and we wake up the next morning, and they've all gone mouldy.
Oh, okay. So I wonder if there's just some inherent fungal disease sitting on there that you're not noticing, and once it gets into that sweaty conditions in a bag, that they're just, you know, going crazy like that.
They're falling off the tree and going mouldy overnight.
Okay.
We're just wondering. We had 338 millimetres of rain in January, and it's been stinky hot and humid. Like, it was 38 yesterday. But so humid.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering whether the weather conditions are causing it.
Yeah, look, that's definitely going to be affecting the citrus in those sort of conditions. Look, what I think you probably need to be doing, how big are the plants at the moment? Can you spray them with a fungicide?
We could.
Yep.
But your mum told us to, they're not too high, because your mum told us to cut the tops off.
Yeah, absolutely. I always say don't let, you know, lemons get too tall. You know, you go out to people's gardens, you see them sort of that 3 to 4 metre tall mark and all the fruit's right up the top, and of course you can't get to it. It just drops, it sits on the ground, it rots, fruit fly come in, you know, all of the above starts to happen. And if you keep a lemon tree to, you know, that about 2 metres tall, really, that's all you need it to be.
That's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, so you can reach the fruit. Look, no problems there. Then heaps of fruit. You'll feed the neighbours, feed all the family with a plant that size.
Look, not at the moment.
What I'll be doing...
We're raking them up, but the fruit looks beautiful. It's like perfect, beautiful colour. It's fine.
Yep.
But then, you know, you put your head down and have a nap. You wake up and it's bomb pear shape, not literally, but yeah.
So look, a good old spray in that case with a fungicide, some sort of copper fungicide like copper oxychloride. All over the plant. Look, also, I would say important to do that as well when in humid conditions, when the plant's budding up as well, so you don't get a type of blossom end rot into the citrus. Look, you can do that. You can also get systemic fungicides as well, like phos acid, where you mix it up and then you water it into the ground and it gets absorbed up through the root system of the plant and into it that way. But for what you're doing, I'd be using a copper spray. And just trying to keep that any fungus that's under, you know, that's prevalent around your area under control in these conditions.
So it's a fungus that we can't see. Is that what's
happening? Look, that's what I'm thinking. It just must be sitting there on the plants. You're putting it into, you know, slightly sweaty conditions, and then off it goes. It's falling on the ground. That's usually the indication of some sort of fungicide.
Yeah, even in a bowl, It's ruined the next day.
And when you cut them, there's no fruit fly or anything inside there. There's no weevil. No, okay.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful.
Okay, so look, get some copper oxychloride. Start spraying them fairly regularly. It's not something that's going to be absorbed into the plant and become a nasty thing. It just sits there and acts as a nice preventative to keep fungal disease under control.
Should we see instant results?
Look, you probably won't see instant results at this time of year and, the way that the fruit's set already, but it's something you just keep on using regularly. Once you get to the humid times of the month, so around that November period, that's when you'd start using it.
Right. Well, it's that 10th year. Never had the problem before.
Okay. Look, fungal spores are just windborne, so it's just one of those things that happen, yeah. We get, weird climatic conditions. So we get, areas now where, it's very humid when maybe it wasn't in the past. And, just have to treat that and try and keep it under control.
Good man. Thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. Cheers.
See you and bye-bye.
So we've got Lynn from Chisholm. She's got a question about the olive tree.
Very good afternoon, Lynn. How can we help you?
Hi, Scott. I have an olive tree which has heaps of olives on it and they're now turning black.
Yes.
I assume that means they're ripening and I need to do something with them, but I have no idea what.
You need to pick them in that case if you want to have black olives. I've had people say, oh, can I get a green olive tree? Well, yeah, you just pick them when they're a little bit younger. But as far as eating the olive straight off the tree, it's not going to be a very nice experience. They're apparently very bitter, a little bit hard. I've never done that myself. So you have to treat them. Yes, I have done this before. And effectively, you have to salt the olive. So you have to make up a briny liquid.
They call it pickling them.
Yeah, I guess so, but you have to change the briny liquid pretty much every day.
Yeah.
And then after, I haven't done this for a while, I'm just talking off the top of my head, so hopefully someone might be able to ring in and give us some better information about this. But after brining them for, and changing the water for a number of days, then you have to sort of de-brine them at that point in time and then soak them in normal water and it sort of sucks the salty taste back out. So it's a bit of a process. I think commercially they do it, probably with chemicals. That just seems to be the way of the world now. There is a particular way. Hopefully someone can ring in and give us some exact numbers on how to do the brining.
Oh, fantastic. I hope there is someone out there that can do that. Otherwise, I'll have to Google, I guess.
Yes, yeah, Google always helps. Yeah, briny Google.
Briny Google.
Yeah, look, I seem to remember it took a couple of weeks to do it. It was a bit of a process. And then once you've finished sort of washing and back out, I guess is the best way to think about it, then you can do other things with them and put other stuff in there and get some different tastes.
All right, well, thanks very much for that, Scott.
That's all right. Thank you, Lynn. I've just reached back probably about 20 years there to remember that, but I got there and let's, talk to the wonderful community out there and they'll be able to help us out, I hope.
Okay. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks,
well
Lynn.
Done.
Cheers.
Thank you, bye.
Cheers. Thanks, Lynn. So essentially kind of pickling them, I guess, or?
I think so. Oh,
it sounds a two-eyed basket, though, doesn't it?
Well, it did take a long time, and I've got to say I only did it once.
Once was enough.
Yeah, once was enough, but you can't eat them straight off the tree. Not a very pleasant experience at all. But they are just such a tough plant, though, to grow. They'll withstand the salt. They'll grow on the side of a rock pretty much. Mm-hmm. About the only thing they get is some scale insect here in Newcastle in the humidity.
Yep.
Look, very easily treatable, very prunable. You can use them, as a hedge as well if you want to. And they're not a really dense hedge, but they still let lots of light through. Prune. You can actually make bonsai out of them as well. I've got a bonsai olive lurking around somewhere. Yeah, one day I'm going to put it on the side of a rock, actually, and try and make it a little bit more attractive. But I've been growing that for some time now. Yeah, it's a good thing to do.
I didn't realize you could bonsai olive trees.
You certainly can, yeah. And they have that really gnarly look about them and knuckles and stuff. So it looks like they're, an aged plant when they're really probably just a few years old.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
learn something. I suppose you can bonsai anything, can't you?
Well, you pretty much can, yeah. That's the truth, yeah. But I think small leaf plants probably look a little bit better than, you know, trying to do like an oak or a gum tree where you've got these big leaves and they just look a little bit odd. So small leaf plants, better for bonsaiing.
We've got Lee from Madawi, and I've got a question about the Hardenberger plants.
Hardenberger.
Lovely pink, purple flowers.
Yes, they are. How are you? How can we help you with it, Lee?
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Not a problem. How can we help you with the plants?
It's just starting to die back a bit, and I want to prune it back, but my wife said if you prune it, you'll kill it. And I just thought, well, it needs pruning because we won't get any new growth and won't flower next year.
Yeah, okay. So Hardenberger is actually a little native climber. If you're out walking around in the bush, you will actually see it lurking around out there. There's, like you said, you've got the purple one. There is also one with a whitey pinky flower as well.
Yeah.
I would be careful about pruning it back. Your wife is a font of wisdom, Lee. She really is. I'd be careful about pruning it back like pruning any native plant. And if you're going to do it, you'd have to be very, very selective and gentle about it. Yeah. You certainly wouldn't go in with the shears and give it a wholesale prune. Almost just a tip prune just to try and keep it under control.
I just want to trim a bit off the top near the over the fence.
Yep, so look, I think you can probably...
Only about 3 inches.
Oh, okay. Well, you can safely do that. As far as fertiliser, though, be very careful what you're fertilising it with. Only use a native-specific fertiliser, or you could use blood and bone as well. It's a lovely, gentle fertiliser to use on native plants. And so that will really, you know, keep it going until next year in that case. But a really great, fast-growing little native climber, your Hardenberger.
Yeah. Terrific. Thanks very much, Scott.
Okay, and you listen to what your wife has got to say all the time, Lee. You really have to.
Yeah, that's right.
She's proven herself here today.
Yeah, okay.
Cheers,
thank
mate.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Lee. It's Gardening Talkback on 2NURFM, 49216216. Now, Scott, you teased a little bit about passion fruit. I tried to get it out for picking, but you wouldn't say anything.
Well, you can pick it now. If it's ripe,
yep,
you can pick it because I have been eating some delicious passion fruit.
Oh, if you like.
Really delicious passion fruit and the muesli and the yogurt every morning. So it's just golden. It's really fantastic. But often we start to get calls at this time of year, as you'd be aware, mm-hmm. where people say, oh, I've got passion fruit on the vine, but it's not ripening. What do I do to get it to ripen? And I think the message we need to give people today is it's getting towards the too late time. I think, you know, this next 4 weeks, if your passion fruit's not ripening up now, really time to start to, you know, thin the vine out and get rid of it because it just sits on there and stays green. I know that, you know, we'll get calls, you know, June.
Yep.
Where people are going, I've got this green, hard green passion fruit.
It still hasn't ripened up yet.
Yeah, what do I do? And there's just nothing you can do. You know, the sun's gone, the days are shorter, it's colder, it's not going to ripen. Mm. So, you know, if you haven't got some colour starting in the fruit, you know, over this next, you know, 2 to 4 weeks, I really think it's all over Red Rover, unfortunately, for your passion fruit.
Right, so about April you'd start thinking about...
Yeah, start thinning it off and get rid of that way. And just give the plant a nice, you know, lovely, you know, little light prune back, just like the Hardenberger. And you can fertilise them as well, probably not so much at this time of year, but once you get into June, July, August, that's when you start getting into the passion fruit. With some sulfate of potash to promote the flowering of the plant, to get it flowering as early as possible. You really do need a spot for your passion fruit where you're getting about 6 hours, you know, at least sun a day. If they're in shade, you know, for any more than that, you're just not going to get that ripening. So you really won't get a fantastic plant.
Right.
You
know, they need a fairly decent open area for
you
them.
You do. Over the old shed, you know, along the fence line, that sort of thing. Not sort of rambling in amongst, you know, and under taller trees. You're not going to get ripening. Because if you do that, you'll be probably calling us up in May, June saying, why have I got the big green fruit on there that's not ripening? So, over the next few weeks, just keep an eye on it and get ready to thin out and get rid of that fruit.
Right, and start pruning it down, I guess.
Yeah, so sorry about the bad news.
Oh. Yeah. So if it's not ripe now, it's never going to be.
I reckon so.
That's a shame. Because we've got Chris from Raymond Terrace, and they've got a question about blue glow.
Agave, that's it. Yeah. Hello, Chris. How can we help you, mate?
Hi, Scott. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've got two of them. They've been in the ground now for probably about 3 years. They're quite large.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing really well. But one of them started to get, it's like it's rotting from the inside. The inside of the leaves are starting to turn black.
Yes, okay. And look, the conditions that they're in, are they fairly well drained, or is it like a bit of a wet spot you've got them in?
No, my garden sort of slopes,
yes.
And now at the top of it, and it's in good soil. I put a lot of the cacti succulent mix when I was putting them in.
Yeah.
And it was a sort of sandy soil as it was below that. So, but yeah, it's only they've like I said, they've been there a few years and they were doing really well. And they're only about, a metre and a half apart.
Mm-hmm.
One is doing very well, no problem. And the other one, I wasn't quite sure what was causing it.
Yeah, look, generally with agaves, they just can't keep on soaking up water. That's why I was asking those questions about the drainage. And it's funny, though, that you've got one that's doing okay and then one, you know, in fairly close proximity that's, looking a little bit tired and unhappy. And when you go out and, be careful of the spikes of these things because they are pretty spiky.
Yeah.
When you go out and you're given the leaves a bit of a squish to see if they're, sort of holding water or they're firm or are they... Have you done anything?
Not really. I tried to. Some of the lower leaves, they're starting to yellow a bit, and they were quite black, so I cut a few of those away.
Mm-hmm.
But even the very centre of it, where the brand new leaves are, it's a bit sort of like wobbly, too. It's not like, how like they're quite stiff sort of leaves?
Yes, yeah. Look, all I can pin this on for you is that somehow its root systems hit some water somewhere and it's just not coping with it, because I mean that's the perfect symptoms of an agave, that's sitting in too much water, or someone's put it in a pot and it's sitting in a saucer of water, for instance. I know that's not what you've done, but that sounds exactly like the symptoms of it, and it just really can't process the amount of moisture that's getting through it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so whether you start to, dig around and downstream of it, if you get them adrift and try and drain some water away, that might be a way to do it, or even just lift it out again. But it sounds like it might be a little bit too big for that, and certainly too spiky as well.
Would you think it'd be any good digging it out of the ground and get it out?
That might be a way to do it and get it up into a pot, so at least you can monitor what's happening and the water's draining away from it. Unfortunately, with agaves, if they go too far like that, then they'll just rot away and you really can't do anything to bring them back to life. So if you're going to act, you probably have to act fairly quickly on that and get it into a better drained position.
Oh, okay. Thanks for that. Yeah, I wish I had noticed it earlier.
No, not a problem. And always remember with agaves, Chris, that, you've got a lifespan of probably about 10 to 15 years. And if you see them starting to flower, that's when they're going to die, unfortunately. You do see agaves, and bromeliads as well. They throw out their flower and that's the death knell. Of the agave.
Oh.
Yeah. They send their seed out to the world and that's it for them.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, they're probably only maybe 3 or 4 years old at most, so, yeah.
Okay, so you've got a bit of time there with them. And look, just finally, they are out in the full sun, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes, okay, yeah, because they really do need to be in the full sun. That's where they live naturally, and, okay, look, yeah, lift it and see how you go with it. Some big, big heavy gloves.
yeah, all right. Thanks for your help. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Chris. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Chris. Earlier we had a question about olives.
Yes.
And you wound back the clock a little bit about brining them.
Yes.
And have we got someone who's mentioned how to brine them? Or?
Yes, that was actually Jim from down in Hamilton South.
Yep,
he gave us a quick call up and that was fantastic. Thank you for that, Jim. Really appreciate that call. And he gave me, here's my notes, 1 part salt to 10 parts water.
Mm-hmm.
And then stick them in a container with a lid on there. But you'd really need to check them every week. And I think this is what happened to me, that they can start to go moldy. And if you really need to check them and almost change the brine every week. And that was my downfall. I got a bit lazy about doing that. Now, if you've been slitting, if you've sort of put little holes in the olives so that they can absorb the brine in, you might only have to keep them for 1 or 2 months in that water. But Jim said, like,
one
if you
1 or 2 months,
yeah, 1 or 2 months. So it's quite a hefty process you're going through. But Jim told us that if you haven't slit them and you just keep them whole, you could have to keep them in there for 6 months.
It's too hard basket, sorry.
It's probably a bit too much for me to do, and that was proven in my last effort. But, it's give it a go. And, look, he also told us that if you change the brine weekly, then it will get rid of that bitterness a whole lot quicker. So, yeah, checking it weekly, making sure you haven't got mold, trying to get rid of that bitterness. That's the way to go. And then you can bottle them up in vinegar, you know, water, some other salt and stuff, whatever, chilies in there if you wanted to give it some extra bite. And, process.
Put some peppercorns in there maybe? Or
you could do that. But, you and I'd have to get through the 1 to 2 months before we got to that.
Or potentially 6 months.
6 months, yes, yeah.
Well, then we probably would have forgotten about it.
We probably would have. What's this sitting in the jar?
Five years later, we see a jar.
It's alive.
It's Gardening Talk back on 2NURFM. We've got Roz from Shoal Bay, and she's got a question about passion fruit's percentage with olives as well.
Good afternoon, Roz. I think you're about to completely package the whole show up today and put a ribbon on it.
It's not a question. First of all, I've had a passion fruit vine for a very long time, and my gardener disappeared off the planet last December, and I'm housebound. And it was covered in fruit, we get beautiful passion fruit off it. And I didn't know what to do with it. So I was listening and I heard you or Judy and potash, I was told. Mm-hmm. So I eventually got some potash and put it on. And now we're getting 10 to 20 passion fruit every second day.
Oh, fantastic. There we go.
And they're beautiful, beautiful passion fruit. It's
a testimonial for our advice.
Yes, yeah.
Thank you.
I could, honestly, they're just beautiful. I had about 20 yesterday that I cut in half and took the pulp out to save. But I've also got a recipe for passion fruit skin jam, I've made before, and it's quite nice. Now, the other thing about the olives, I just had a quick look, I've got a lot of Woman's Weekly recipe books, and I know that in one of them there is a detailed description of how to pickle them and treat them and all that jazz.
Okay.
But I just don't know which one it is at the moment. But if somebody wanted to, that lady I think asked if she wanted to call me later, I can probably have a quick look through a few of my books. But Women's Weekly recipe book does have how to do it step by step. So if that's any help to anyone.
Well, thank you for that. Ida Buttrow is a very wise lady, wasn't she? I don't think she wrote all the recipes, though. I think she was just the editor of the magazine.
Ida Buttrow? not Women's Weekly. It is a Women's Weekly.
Yes.
Sorry. I'm on a different page to her. But anyway, so thanks again for the passion fruit, because they are just, they're just amazing. And that's, I'd recommend, as you said, potash. And it's only had one dose, I think, two doses. They started within a couple of days. They were there, and some of them were just a little bit starting to colour because it's really thick and high, and, you know, I can't get anyone to do anything with it. But now we're getting them about, as I said, 10 to 20 a day.
Okay, well, thanks so much for the testimonial. Really appreciate the call, Roz. Thank you.
Thank you very much there, Roz. Well, Scotty Sharp, we're just about out of time for another week, and we're going to mention beetroot.
Yes, I was going to mention beetroot. Time to plant them at the moment. You can actually plant beetroot seed as well. It's only a very fine little seed. Mm-hmm. Don't have to be careful about it. Probably best to go to your local garden centre and get a seedling. You grow them in pots.
Grow pots. To be continued.
Yes, we'll finish that off.
It's Gardening Talk back on 2NURFM.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.